Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available. Tech Guide. The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further. Tech Guide. I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device. Tech Guide. You know, we want that to be light. We want that to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Tech Guide Podcast. This is our take on the week's consumer tech news and reviews. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. Stephen Fenwick is my name and I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, we're going to open up with our news wrap, which includes the parliamentary inquiry into IT pricing. We're also going to look at a site giving away free stuff and also check out a survey that shows that we're using the wrong backup devices to secure our data. In the Tech Guide reviews, we'll check out the new Sony Xperia Z smartphone, Seagate's new range of external hard drives, and Panasonic's very latest digital cameras and camcorders. Our Tech Guide interview this week is an interesting one with Chris Corbould, the visual effects supervisor for the latest Bond film, Skyfall. And we'll finish off with your questions on the Tech Guide help desk. And it's all proudly brought to you by our sponsors, Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. A lot to get through, so let's get cracking. Well, the inquiry took place in Canberra last week, and this was the IT pricing inquiry, which had summoned Apple, Adobe, and Microsoft to Canberra. This was a pretty big deal when three of the major tech companies here in Australia called to Canberra to really get to the bottom of why Australians are paying more for software and hardware products than the rest of the world, the US in particular, the UK, and other parts of the world. The inquiry kicked off, first of all, with Apple Australia boss Tony King fronting the inquiry and being grilled for some time about Apple's pricing, not only for their hardware products, but also for content through iTunes, such as TV shows, movies, and music, etc. And it was quickly pointed out by Tony King the fact that on the content side, Apple had very little say in the pricing for that content, because the owners of the content, we're talking the music labels, movie studios, are the ones who actually set the pricing region to region, including Australia. I think Tony King's response was that he'd love to see lower content prices, but that was really out of their hand. It was a card that they couldn't play. The cards were in the hands of the content holders. Now, on the hardware front, Tony King also pointed out that pricing, there were a lot of factors that affected pricing for Apple here in Australia. He also pointed out the fact that the pricing here in Australia includes GST, whereas a little bit misleading, US pricing does not include sales tax. So while we're doing a price comparison, say, on the Australian Apple website to the US Apple website, the pricing quoted on the US website does not include sales tax, which can inflate the price up to 8.8%, whereas the Australian pricing reflects the included 10% GST. And he also pointed out that he gave an example. He said the new iPad with Retina display and the iPad mini were actually within 1% and 5% of the US pricing. And that's all thanks to, no doubt, the strength of the Aussie dollar. So while people may think that they're paying slightly less in the US, I think we're getting a fairly good deal from Apple products here in Australia. And Apple have been known to drop prices unannounced, when especially since the dollar has been surging in the last year or two. But moving on to Microsoft and Adobe, and these were two companies that were pretty much had some pretty big questions to answer. First of all, Microsoft stepped up and were asked why the Australians had to pay $599 for Office Professional and users in the US could pay $200 less for the exact same product in the US. Now, it was revealed that region to region, Microsoft set their own pricing, obviously using the US as a guideline. But Microsoft's attitude was that if people weren't happy with their price, they'd go elsewhere. They'd basically vote with their wallet, which was an interesting response to the inquiry. Adobe was also asked some questions about their products and the price discrepancy, which between here and the US was about, I think, $1,600 difference. Between the same exact product here, Creative Suite 6, here in Australia costs, and I think I've got my math right, Creative Suite 6 in Australia costs $3,175, while a US user for the exact same product pays $1,899. So that's a little bit of a difference. That's actually quite a difference. And Adobe said that what they had done is actually lowered the pricing of the Creative Cloud subscription. That's the service where rather than paying an upfront cost for Creative Suite 6, you can pay a monthly subscription, which gives you not only all of the applications, but all the updates for free. And as long as you keep paying your monthly subscription, it will continue. You'll be able to continue to use it. But coincidentally, that price reduction only came after Adobe was summoned to appear before the IT pricing inquiry. So I don't know whether that's a coincidence, but that's what they fell back on. But this is going to go a long way before answers the right answers are forwarded to the reason why Australians are paying more. I think there's a lot of customers out there are tired of the price gouging that's going on out there. They just want a fair go with this world economy now, this digital economy, we could say, where it's software that we download over the internet rather than there being boxes shipped around the world. Digital downloads really shouldn't cost that much more anywhere in the world. You're listening to Tech Guide.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, be honest, who loves a freebie? There are plenty of people. I've got my hand up as well. Freebies are great. But what would you say if I told you there was a site where you could head over there and grab a whole bunch of freebies? Well, that site is called Pinch Me, and that's P-I-N-C-H as in pinch, and me as in M-E-me. So Pinch Me, in other words, Pinch Me, I might be dreaming. Pinchme.com.au is a site that's just launched where users can sign up to get free products from a range of products. We're talking things like, you know, health, lifestyle, beauty products, even food for free. Now, the idea behind this is the fact that you sign up to the site, you kind of become a tester for those products. So what? Not only do you get the products are delivered by Australia Post within a week to your doorstep, but then what you're invited to do, members of the site are invited to then to go back to pinchme.com.au within a month and answer some questions about that product that they requested that they got for free. That's the least we can do. Answer 6 quick questions. So you're kind of providing feedback for that particular item. Now, what that does is it allows Pinch Me to have a wide range of products, a wide range of companies on the books so they can get this feedback by offering these free samples that they give people an opportunity to test their products without having to buy them. So they can test them, provide this feedback, and this information then is passed on to the relevant companies, and they can make their products better, worse. They can change them, they can improve them, hopefully make them better, not worse. But the idea is to give the user something for free, but what they can give in return for that product is some feedback. So pretty simple idea there. And if you are interested, the site address is pinchme.com.au. I've written a story at techguide.com.au if you want to check it out and get your freebies. Well, next week, March 31, is World Backup Day. Now, I never even knew this day existed until I received an email from Buffalo, the external hard drive company. World Backup Day comes on March 31, and I think that it's held on March 31 because the day after is April Fool. And I think one of their taglines of World Backup Day is that you don't want to be an April Fool. So get in on March 31. Get in there, learn how to back up your data properly. Now, Buffalo actually commissioned a survey that looked at more than 500 small and medium-sized businesses about how they manage their data. Now, very, very interesting results here because a lot of companies, a lot of homes, in fact, small businesses, medium business, they are recognizing that you do need to back up your data, and losing that it could be disastrous. So a lot of them are opting for external hard drives as their backup. Another 45% said they use USB flash drives and CD media, so disk backup. But only 10% of businesses were using NAS drives, and NAS is short for Network Attached Storage. A lot of the businesses, and that's fair enough, they're using an external hard drive, as a consumer would, but the problem with just having an external hard drive is the fact that if that drive fails, you don't have a backup apart from what's already on your computer. So the idea of having a backup is there for safety. Now, what a NAS provides is not only, as its name suggests, a network attached storage, so you can access the contents of your storage on your network, whether it's at your home office, in a larger company, or just in the home. But what a NAS usually involves is a redundancy system, which means that the backup is also backed up. So in case one of the drives fails, you've got a backup to that backup. Now, there are ways you can back it up twice, three times if you want to. But if you want to just have that single backup, it's there. And that's the safeguard that a NAS setup provides, that built-in redundancy. A lot of businesses aren't aware that if that external hard drive can no longer load, it goes on the fritz, that data you kept on that drive, whether it's a backup, whether it might be just information and documents, whatever, that you couldn't fit on your computer, on your main computer, then that's gone unless you have to pay big money to retrieve that data. So for peace of mind, NAS can give you not only network accessible data, but also a backup to your backups. What Buffalo also did was provide a list of questions, which I've included in my story on Tech Guide, which can users can ask themselves. And the point of the questions is to the answers that you give to these questions will determine the right type of storage that you need. As the survey pointed out, there were a lot of people who weren't employing the right backup for their data. At the risk of possibly losing it. NAS storage is the way to go if you've got a small business. Even if you've got a home where you've got a lot of content to access, the whole household can access it on their computers, on their devices, and you have a backup to the backup, as I already mentioned. So that's one way of avoiding becoming an April Fool the day after World Backup Day. That full story is at techguide.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide is brought to you proudly by Netgear. Did you want to experience the fastest Wi-Fi ever in your home? Well, now you can with Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi gear. You can supercharge your home wireless network with the Netgear D6300 Wi-Fi modem router, which delivers next generation gigabit Wi-Fi, which is up to three times faster than existing Wi-Fi products. NBN ready and great for streaming HD video, Netgear's family of 802.11ac products provide increased Wi-Fi coverage, which means you can now use your mobile gadgets in every corner of your home. It comes with the Netgear Genie app that makes installation easy and lets you view and play all your digital photos, movies, and music on your smartphone, tablet, PC, or smart TV. If you want to find out more, head over to netgear.com.au/fastest Wi-Fi.
Tech Guide now. A Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
To kick off our reviews for this week, we're going to look at the Sony Xperia Z smartphone. Now, this smartphone's been only just released last week through Optus. I've actually had this for a few weeks now. I saw it for the first time at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. I actually wrote a small hands-on story about the device, a little mini review. But I've had a chance now to fully delve into the product, and I have to say I liked what I saw. The Sony Xperia Z has got a 5-inch screen and a quad-core processor. From a design perspective, it's quite thin and light. It's got a nice 5-inch screen and a solid feel. You can really feel the quality in your hands there. And what I like about it is that all the ports around the outside of the device are all covered up. There's little doors that cover up, that seal the device. And that's for a good reason, because the Xperia Z is waterproof. Yes, you can stick this underwater. There's actually a photo on my review of the Xperia Z sitting in a vase. bars. Try doing that with another phone, and you'll have to rush off and buy a new one because it won't be able to take it. But the Xperia Z can. It can handle water. Not only is it, it's not splash-proof, it's actually waterproof. You can dunk this thing. You can shower it with this thing. The product itself is 13.9 centimetres long, 7.1 centimetres wide, and just 7.9 millimetres thick. Only weighs 146 grams. Now, apart from the waterproof feature, which I think is a real killer feature, because how many people have dunked their phones accidentally and it's gone, the phone is dead. Not with the Xperia Z. A very, very big tick in the box there, just for that feature alone. But what I like about the phone is the fact that Sony have gotten their heads together. All parts of Sony got their heads together and made a good product. From the TV side of things, there's a mobile Bravia engine for the screen. It's a full HD screen, 1920 by 1080. On the computing side, there's great processor, a graphics processor on board, so really works very smoothly, very fast. On the camera side, there's also the same miniature version of the sensors used in Sony's dedicated cameras. The camera on board's a 13-megapixel camera and includes HDR, which is high dynamic range, so you can capture pictures and videos in any light, including a very strong backlight. Try taking a photo or a video with a strong backlight. All you get is a silhouette, not with the Xperia Z. It's also got scene recognition, so it can automatically choose the right settings for the particular photo you're taking, whether it's a macro shot, landscape shot, a portrait. It can detect it and give you the right settings. Very high quality images. I put a couple up on my story on Tech Guide. Also included is NFC, which is a great way to share content with one touch. So you can share if you've got a pair of headphones or a television or a pair of speakers. One touch with NFC, that content can be shared. You may have this year's range of Bravia TVs is going to have a way for you to one tap on the screen, and your content, your pictures and your videos will be up there on the screen. Really easy. I think the promise of the connected home, I think, is going to go a long way. It's going to reach a lot of people thanks to NFC, which is short for near field communication. Now, the Xperia Z, as I said, takes great photos, also includes HD voice, which improves call quality. It's like you're in the same room with that person. Best network to try it on, the compatible network that it does exist with is Telstra at the moment. HD voice, terrific feature. Now, the Xperia Z is available now, and as I've said in my story, this is easily the best phone that Sony has ever produced. They've kind of all got all their ducks in a row. Finally, all the different parts of the company have contributed the best technology they can. And with a company as vast as Sony, that should have been the case years ago. Now, it's really good to see they've finally got their act together here. The Xperia Z is one of the best Android phones on the market. The fact that it's waterproof, that's the killer feature in my books. You can read my full review at Tech Guide. This is going to be a popular phone. It's priced at $749 outright or $60 a month on an Optus plan. Full review at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, a moment ago, we were talking about World Backup Day and the importance of a NAS drive. Well, I'm here to talk a little bit more about hard drives, but this time from Seagate. Now, Seagate's another very popular hard drive company. In fact, the first hard drive company to ship more than 2 billion hard disk drives. Now, the first billion took 29 years to sell. The second billion only took 4 years. So it just goes to show how much data we are using. The third billion, I think, will be even less than that, but we won't know that. It's probably for another 2 or 3 years, maybe. But the two main products that Seagate have released, one's called the Central Shared Storage, which is kind of like a home cloud solution, and the other is the Seagate Wireless Plus. Let's start off with the Central Shared Storage from Seagate. As I said, it's like a home cloud storage solution that allows people in your home, on your network, to access the content of the drive. So what, not only can it give you easy access to that content, but it could also provide backups for the computers in your home, whether it's laptops, PCs, even Macs. It's compatible with Time Machine. So you can back up all the computers in your home through one central shared storage. So you can also access the content on your smartphones and tablets within that network, and you can even remotely access that content from outside your network. So you can actually log into the hard drive from anywhere else through a web browser, just on the other side of the world if you have to, or using the free app that runs, the Seagate app that runs on tablets and smartphones. The central shared storage is available in April, $199 for 2 terabytes, $269 for 3 terabytes, $369 for 4 terabytes. Moving on to the Seagate Wireless Plus. This is a portable drive that you can take with you. 1 terabyte of room. That's heaps of room. You can fit 500 movies on this thing. And what it is, it allows you to take all that, all your content, and wirelessly stream it to up to 8 devices at a time. So I'm talking 8 smartphones or 8 tablets. And what it allows you to do, it forms a little Wi-Fi connection. So if you're on a trip or you're on a long flight, you can actually take, rather than having to pick and choose the movies that you want to see on the limited and fit on the limited space of your iPad, for example, you can take your whole collection with this external drive and choose what you want to watch when you're on the go. So as I said, it creates its own Wi-Fi network, it creates a direct connection, and up to 8 different devices can link in and stream that content at the same time. The Seagate Wireless Plus is available now from JB and Officeworks, and it costs $249 storage, something we're always going to use, something we're always going to need. You can read that full story at techguide.com.au. Panasonic have just unveiled their 2013 range of Lumix cameras and camcorders. They had a big launch down in Adelaide last week, and a few lucky journalists were able to make it. I was unable to make it. Circumstances beyond my control prevented me from heading down. But my good friend and professional photographer Chris Oaten, a former News Limited colleague of mine, represented Tech Guide for the launch and wrote us a great report on Tech Guide, and he outlined all of these new products, starting with their new lineup of HD camcorders. Flagship is the X920M, which is really aimed at the enthusiast videographers. It's got a 3MOS System Pro, priced at $1,699. But that's the beauty of the Lumix range, not only the camcorders and the cameras. They're aimed at a wide range of users, whether you're a seasoned professional, an enthusiast, or just a beginner. The next camcorder down in the range was the V720M, which is priced at $799. Both of those are going to be available in May. Available now, though, are 3 other models, the V20M with a 50x optical zoom, the V210M, which is Panasonic really aiming for the travel as a good travel companion. That's $399. And the V110 brings up the rear at $299, a really cheap, affordable camcorder. There's also a tough camcorder announced too, the WA30. And this is sort of your adventure, outdoor traveler, extreme enthusiast. So it's waterproof to 10 meters, shockproof to 1.5 meters, and freeze-proof to minus 10 degrees Celsius. Now, that's cold. The other models are announced. They've got these, as with the other models announced, I should say, there's Wi-Fi included, so you can play back via your smartphone or tablet, which is a really handy feature. And you can also stream video in real time over the web. So if you want to do a direct broadcast over the web, you can do with these devices. Now, one feature of the new Lumix cameras, the still cameras I'm talking about now, is NFC capability. And that's something that Panasonic says, well, they hope it'll bring give you a new way to share your photos with others. NFC, as I said, near field communication. We mentioned that with the Sony Xperia Z. This is a feature you're going to be hearing a lot about. So this enables really easy sharing between devices, so you can easily transfer content quite quickly. Another one in the range was the TZ40. Has got a 20x optical zoom, which is provides a 35mm equivalent range of 24 to 480 mil. It's a sort of an all-round camera, so it can capture all kinds of shots for all kinds of users. One other camera that was really caught our eye too was the XS1, which is what Panasonic is claiming is the world's slimmest body profile in its class. It's very thin and light. You should check out the photo on Tech Guide. It is a really small and light camera aimed at your beginners. So a real easy snap and shoot, really just easy to use. Pull it out of your pocket, snap away, takes great photos. Rounding out the range is the FT5, which is the all-weather, waterproof, shockproof, dustproof camera waterproof to 13 metres, shockproof to 2 metres, dustproof and freeze-proof as well to minus 10 degrees Celsius. You want to go to some pretty cold places to get that. But if you want to catch up with all of that information, Chris has done a great wrap-up for us at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
This week's Tech Guide interview is with Chris Corbould. He is the visual effects supervisor for the latest Bond film, Skyfall, which hits Blu-ray and DVD this week, March 27. You can get your hands on Skyfall, which is actually the highest grossing Bond film of all time. In the UK, it actually made more money than Avatar. This is the 23rd installment of the long-running franchise. It actually took more than $1 billion worldwide. So that's the most successful Bond film ever. Skyfall, of course, starring Daniel Craig as Bond, is, as usual, an action-packed adventure set in exotic locations, some breathtaking set pieces and great action. And Chris Corbould, who is the, as we mentioned, the visual effects supervisor, had a lot to do with what we saw on the screen. The finished product, Chris Corbould, his visual effects team really got that. What they put up on the screen was breathtaking. But here's what we caught up with Chris. He's here in Australia to promote the Blu-ray and DVD release of Skyfall, and here's what he had to say earlier.
Well, Chris, thanks for your time. Welcome to Australia.
Oh, good to be here.
Is it your first time here?
It certainly is.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've turned on the weather for you. That's the main thing.
Oh, it's a beautiful city, I've got to say.
All right. Well, we're here to talk about Skyfall, and you yourself, you've been working on Bond for quite a long time.
Skyfall was my 13th Bond film. Wow. Yeah.
So that's you go back a long way.
It's been a big part of my life.
Tell us how you got started.
I was working for a special effects company. I went in there to do literally make tea initially, and then started to learn the craft of engineering, from machine work to welding, hydraulics, pneumatics, and I spent about 8 years doing that, building up my skills. And then went out in the freelance world and started doing on Bond films.
Wow, so you've seen obviously a lot of change in the industry.
Yes.
How does Skyfall compare to, what was your first Bond film you worked
first on? First Bond film I worked on was Spy Who Loved Me.
Wow, that's going back.
Yeah.
How do they compare?
A lot more mechanical these days. You know, my sort of one job I remember on Spy Who Loved Me is I had to make a ski stick that fired a gun. When you go back to Skyfall, Spy Who Loved Me days, the special effects crew was 20 people. And we look at Skyfall, my crew, and that was 100 plus.
Wow.
It's really escalated these days.
Bond films aren't usually associated with visual effects. They're not like Star Wars and those type Transformer type films. But there is a surprising amount of visual effects that go into it. And in Skyfall in particular, is it the opening sequence? There was a fair bit of work put into that as well?
Yeah, I mean, the visual effects work in Bond films, it tends to be more invisible visual effects work. You know, it's not monsters or planets exploding. It's, you know, they're fixing, enhancing, embellishing what we're doing for real. But it's vital. You know, we need them guys to clean up the stuff we're doing. It could be painting out wires or painting out rigs or adding things. So yeah, there's a lot of more than probably people realise, more visual effects in Bond films.
So in the opening sequence, which went for like 13 minutes or whatever, what did you what? I'm sorry to have to give the secrets away, but what was involved in that?
Well, you'll see all the secrets on this Blu-ray anyhow, so you know, it doesn't hurt I'm telling you. Well, the probably biggest thing we had to do on the opening sequence was the digger on the back of the train. You know, we had to make sure that it stayed on there, you know, didn't come off, especially when it was swinging its arm around. So we built a very strong steel track up the middle of the train, built it into the train carriage with an arm that connected to the digger, so we knew that it could only go along that and it couldn't slide off sideways.
Sure.
We then computerised every movement of the digger, the rotation, the bucket movement, and so we could program that. So a press of a button, we, you know, would swing around, it would lift his arm up, it would extend, so we could put Daniel in there, and he didn't have to worry about pressing the wrong lever or getting the action right. That was all done for him.
Sure.
He just had to do the acting.
Absolutely. And I understand too, like, there's you've been involved in the industry a long time, that you would have seen some changes in the technology involved too. So sort of take us into your process. Like, what is the main part of how you do your job?
the biggest innovation in our side of the job, special effects, has been controlling pneumatics, motors, winches with computers. Mm-hmm. You know, we like the repetitivity of it, you know, and the programmability of it, if you like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we can program a winch to drop a guy down, take him sideways. Uh-huh. The same with the, like, for example, the movements of the digger.
Yeah,
gives us much greater control over over it.
So, what are some of the other sequences that are in the Bond films that you're particularly proud of? That when you saw the finished product, you thought, "Well, job well done."
Well, I think one of the biggest ones was particularly in Skyfall, was the tube train, the subway train coming down into the set, which I worked very closely with Sam. I was actually filming out in LA, and he phoned me up and said, "Look, I've got this run through the underground stations of London." He said, "I really need a big set piece." So slept on it that night, and 3 o'clock in the morning came up. Well, if he blows a hole in the underground, the ceiling, then we could, and then the train follows through. Uh-huh. That sounds pretty cool to me.
Absolutely.
It wasn't until I got back to England I realised how big a job it was. And I got my team, you know, look, it's all about teamwork. I got my team around me and said, right, this is what we're going to do. And the first guy, one of my lead engineers, said, well, you realise that one carriage is 60 foot long and we've got to have at least two carriages, so that's 120 foot long. And then we've got to get it up to speed. So by the time we worked it all out, the biggest stage in England is the 007 stage in Plymouth Studio. The rig stretched from one corner to the other. It was huge.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's appropriate. They're on the 007 stage anyway. That's good. You mentioned it's a lot of teamwork involved. Mm-hmm. How closely are you working, obviously, with the director, the actors? How close is that?
Yeah, extremely. You know, obviously I get a script, I'm given a script to read, and then I sit down with the director and give my views on how we could, you know, make it better, make it more spectacular, different. Working with Daniel is always a pleasure. He's very, very interested on working with us to get the best result. You know, I think one of the best examples is in Quantum of Solace. The final scenes, he's in this burning room, and it's very hot, you know, the ceilings are collapsing in, and he's with the lead actress. And I built a replica of the set in my workshops. And I said to Daniel, well, look, this is going to be hot, and I'd like you to come down and experience it, get confident with it, with the lead actress, Olga, so that you're not worried about that when we film it.
Yeah.
Because I think it could detract from what you're acting if you're worried about the flames. So he said, look, great, Chris. He came down on his day off on a Saturday or Sunday, I can't remember, and convinced the leading lady to come down, and we ran the whole thing up, showed in the flames, how quick it went out, you know, a turn of a knob, all dead, showed him the drops. And, you know, I think that really shows in when you see it on film, you know, he could concentrate on the acting side of it rather than worry about all that.
Sure, and just on that, obviously safety is a big part of what you do. You have these big set pieces, cranes and trains coming in. Safety is something that you have to build into it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, we're a lot of it all revolves around testing. You know, we probably shoot four times as much test footage of stuff than we actually shoot on film. Oh. You know, and every explosion, you'll start off with a little puff of smoke, and you just keep building it up till it's where you think, no, that's far enough, or that's exactly what I want to see.
Sure.
You know, and then I would video that, show it to the director, say, "What do you think about this?"
Yep.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want, and then we go and do it on the set.
Okay. And you've obviously done a lot of work out of the Bond universe as well, and understand you're an Oscar winner.
Yes, for your work. Took a while, but got there in the end.
So that was for your work with Christopher Nolan on Inception, is that right?
That's right.
That would have been quite a night, but having your name read out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a complicated script. I still don't really totally understand what it was all about, and I worked on it, but... You know, I think Chris had been writing that for 10 years, so it was a real, you know, love of his lifelong love that he wanted to get on
Absolutely.
Screen. And he gave us a lot of scope to really push the limits on that one.
So where do you keep your Oscar, Chris?
It's on top of my fireplace, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah,
that's
it's
a good place
nowhere
to have it.
Extravagant. It's not holding open the restroom door or anything. No, I'm very proud of it. And the thing that I really wanted to get the Oscar for was that I can get up on stage and thank all my crew.
Yeah,
you know, that was really important to me to publicly make that acknowledgement.
Absolutely. And you were returning to the next Bond film?
I'm hoping that I'm asked. I'd be mortified if I'm not. I'm planning my life around being available for that.
Sure. And in the meantime, have you got any other upcoming projects that you're working on, or you're allowed to talk about it?
I have a very, very exciting project, but I cannot divulge what it's all about. I think
I'm a journalist. You can trust me.
Yeah, of course I can. No, I think in the next couple of months it will become apparent what that project is.
Okay.
I'm very, very excited about it.
Great. Well, thanks for your time, Chris. Appreciate it.
No, my pleasure.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
One question I get asked a fair bit is people wanting to buy another TV. And the other question that I get asked along with it, though, is that With the rise of tablets and smartphones in our hands, in our homes, the number of these products being sold are growing by the day. The other question I get is, do I really need another TV? Should I spend the extra money to get that extra 32-inch or whatever size TV for the bedroom or the kitchen or whatever? Or are there ways I can watch TV on my tablet or smartphone? Well, the answer is yes. There are plenty of solutions that allow you to stream or watch TV on your tablet. The first way, I reviewed a product a little while ago called the ID TV. Now, this was a small dongle, a 30-pin dock connector that used to fit that fits on the iPhone and the iPad, and is kind of like a mini digital set-top box that turns your iPad into a television. It also comes, though, with an aerial connection. So if you don't have terrific reception in your home, you can actually extend this cable to your aerial connection into the wall plug and get your free-to-air digital television on your iPad or iPhone. The need for another TV is gone. You can turn your iPad into that second TV or your smartphone. Just a couple of weeks ago, the ID TV version for Android devices has also been released and has a similar setup, different shaped aerial, fits into a micro USB port on most Android smartphones, needs to be quad-core smartphones, phones like the Xperia Z actually works, the new LG Optimus G, the Galaxy Note 2, the Galaxy S3. So your later Android smartphones can also fit in the ID TV, the Android version, which there will be a story about that on Tech Guide later this week, available from mrmobile.net.au. He brought in the original ID TV as well, and that's been a very popular product. But there are other apps and things that allow you to watch TV. Foxtel Go is a great example of extending the value. If you are a Foxtel customer, you can extend the value of your service with the Foxtel Go app. And not only can you watch TV within the home, if someone's watching maybe another channel, you can watch a second channel on the iPad. Up to two other people in your household can register that user account to an app. So one might have an iPhone, one might have an iPad, and you can be watching different channels on Fox, live TV, catch-up TV, all those sorts of things. So that is, if you're a Foxtel customer, that becomes your TV as well, and you can watch it not only, as I said, in your home, but also on the go. There are other products. I wrote about a product called from Elgato called the NetStream. And this was basically a small digital TV receiver that connects to my aerial, but also connects to my wireless modem router. And what it does, it allows you to install an app on your iPad and iPhone, and also on Android devices now. And what it basically does, because it's connected to the aerial, it's getting my digital signal, but because it's also connected to the Wi-Fi router, that signal is being sent around the home. So I can, in anywhere in my home, stream TV. I've got to have the application running on my computer at the same time, but it allows you to watch any TV channel anywhere in your home, and hence the need, or the don't need, that second television. So that's a check out that review on Tech Guide. I wrote that last year sometime, but that is a really handy product that I use all the time. Rather, if I can't watch TV in front of my TV, there might be something else that people might want to watch. My kids are watching something, my wife's watching something. I can take the iPad anywhere on my wireless network using the iTV app, which goes with the Elgato NetStream product, and watch it anywhere within my home. So do I need another TV? If you own an iPad or an iPhone, the answer is maybe, perhaps not. And that brings our show to an end for another week. You can read more about everything you've heard in this episode at our website, techguide.com.au. And you can get in touch by emailing us at info@techguide.com. techguide.com.au. You can also send us your help desk questions to the Tech Guide Forum, and it may be the question we talk about here on the Tech Guide podcast. A big thanks too to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. Full time here for Tech Guide episode 39. Thanks for listening. We look forward to your company next week. So in the meantime, stay safe and stay connected.